91.3 WLRN presents Topical Currents. This hour we focus on law enforcement in Broward County with BSO Sheriff Scott Israel. Good afternoon, Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman. Scott Israel's election in 2012 surprised many. He succeeded Republican Sheriff Al Lamberti. Israel was a North Bay Village police chief and a 25-year veteran of the Fort Lauderdale Police. With forces across the nation under scrutiny for minority profiling and violence against unarmed suspects, we'll find out how BSO is addressing that volatile issue. Israel has reversed his view on police body cameras. He now supports their use. He also backs the easing of penalties for small-time marijuana possession to a civil citation and a fine. Stay with us. Topical Currents next at the news. And 7 minutes past 1 o'clock, it is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, along with Bonnie Berman, on this Tuesday afternoon.
And Broward County Sheriff Scott Israel heads the largest fully accredited sheriff's department in the United States. He was elected in 2012. There are 5,800 employees, including deputies and firefighters, and a $700 million budget.
The BSO is 100 years old this year, and among many other functions, it also operates the four-unit Broward jail system, where some 4,600 inmates are housed each day. Perhaps some are listening now. Scott Israel is the 16th Broward County Sheriff.
He and his wife, Susan, are parents of triplets who recently graduated from high school. And he joins us now in the studio. Welcome, Sheriff Scott Israel.
It's really great to be here. I'm looking forward to a great hour.
Yeah, it's great to have you. So I thought we'd begin just with a little about your background and your interests and what led you to a desire to have a career in law enforcement.
Well, that question is kind of easy. My dad was a New York City detective. So my brother and I, my sister, we grew up in a law enforcement family and just listened to the stories our whole lives. And it was just, I developed a passion for it. And it was something that I wasn't 100% certain I'd go into it. But as I graduated college and started looking at career pathing, I said, let me give it a try. So I went down to Fort Lauderdale. I applied and I got accepted. I became a Fort Lauderdale police officer and said, maybe I'll do it for a couple of years and see what's next. And now 36 years later, I'm still wearing a uniform.
It's a very demanding job, but what's the most necessary quality for a good police officer?
That's a great question. You certainly need to have courage, intelligence, compassion, leadership skills. But I would say the ability to diffuse situations and allow situations to de-escalate rather than escalate. And if you could, you know, bring people together and you have the ability to get everybody working the same way and not having that pot boil over, I think that's an ability one would want to have.
Mm. Would you say that law enforcement has changed dramatically since 9/11?
Dramatically.
In what ways?
Well, there's a lot of mistrust.
You mean on whose side?
On both sides.
Right.
Absolutely on both sides. And most of it is unwarranted. As I tell our folks all the time, 95% of the public, they're good people. They're people that go to work every day and believe in the same things we believe in. You know, they want to do the right things and they want to help other people. And I know, having been in this industry for 36 years, that 95% of the men and women that gravitate into law enforcement and fire and public safety are the same way. They're good people, honest people who want to protect and serve. But, only one perfect person ever inhabited the earth, and I'm not it, and neither are they. And
right.
People have to understand that. And we as police make mistakes. We have to understand we make mistakes. We have to train not to make mistakes. When we make mistakes, we have to own up to them. I have to get before the camera or behind the microphone and say, we made this mistake. Here's what we're going to do about it. Here are the ramifications. Here are the repercussions. But when we do everything right, I need to show that same leadership skill and be able to go out in front and say, no, we didn't make any mistakes. We did everything right. And here's what happened. And it's all about communication.
It's an especially different time in this environment now to be to head a major police department in an urban area. What does your department do to try to avoid the kind of incidents that confront so many departments as to the shooting of unarmed persons and profiling?
Yeah, three things. Number one, it starts with diversity. I make sure that we have an agency that looks differently, thinks differently. We have hybrid ideas rather than my idea. Ferguson, let's take Ferguson. You have a police department that was approximately, I believe, 3-4% African American, serving a city that was about 80% African American. There's not going to be a trust in the community. Community's not going to look in and say, I trust that person or I believe in that agency. I believe when a community looks at a police department, it needs to be looking at it like they're looking at a mirror. They need to see a reflection of themselves. You know, and in Broward County, you know, we're African American, we're white, we're Hispanic, we're gay, we're straight. In fact, the command staff at our agency is Broward County. So that's number one. Number two, you need a visible sheriff. I have done every possible thing I could do to connect with all kinds of communities in Broward County. I realize that if we were to have a white police officer kill an unarmed black man, you can't go out into the black community and say, well, let's all get together and work this out. That system of trust has to be in place. That community has to believe in me, the pastors, the homeowners, the community activists, the leaders.
So how do you reach out to them? How do you instill this trust?
By going to events, by being visible, by coming on shows, by being a sheriff they can associate with, by being a household name. I go to churches, I go to mosques, I go to temples, I go to meetings. You know, I work weekends. I'm at different event after different event after different event. You know, I balance it very carefully with my family life and my home life, but you have to be visible and you have to be, you know, trusted by the community. And I can't sit here and tell our listeners that Ferguson would never happen here. We can't say that. But I could tell you this, I truly believe with all my heart that the aftermath of Ferguson could not happen here. I believe the communities of Broward County would trust me enough to make sure justice is served. We do comprehensive and complete reports, forward everything over to the state attorney's office for review, and let the chips fall where they may.
It's odd that in 2015, you're the first Jewish Florida sheriff in its history.
I've been told.
And also, you were named Humanitarian of the Year by the Soref Jewish Community Center in Plantation.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we've interviewed a Humanitarian of the Year before.
You have lots of awards. I want to get to that, which ones actually mean the most to you. But I wanted to follow up on the trust and everything. A year ago, you were wary of adding the body cameras to the police uniforms. Now you've stated the community wants body cameras and you're in favor of them. Why your change of mind?
Well, I really wasn't wary about it, and
was misreported.
It was misreported,
okay.
and it wasn't really a change. I had concerns about the body cameras. That's what I said, and I still have some concerns, but I do firmly believe, let me go on record as saying empirically, I support the use of body cameras. The Broward County public wants to see what happened out there. I want to see what happened out there. I believe with all my heart that most of the time the videos are going to absolutely clear a deputy or an officer of wrongdoing, and it's going to show that they acted properly and courageously and did everything right. But if they do something wrong, that too needs to, you know, what happens under the color of dark needs to be exposed during the light of day.
Are they in favor of them, the policemen?
I would say no.
No.
The union has come out against
them. Yes.
Right.
I was wondering if one of the drawbacks to the body cameras might be that it might be harder to give a break to a violator, that you're on record of saying, well, you know, I'm going to overlook this time instead of playing it by the book.
Great point, Joe. You know, everything's recorded. But my main concern, you know, yesterday, today, and tomorrow, you know, my main concern, Bonnie, with the body cameras is that the cost. An agency our size, and it's not the $1 or $2 million to buy the body cameras and the equipment. I would need a staff, or will need a staff of about 10 to 12 people forever
to read them,
to redact information, to supply them with the attorneys, to answer the public records request, to record and store. I mean, this is a mammoth undertaking in an agency our size, and I expect the county commission to pay for it.
It would probably be that everyone going to court would want to have the photo evidence of their arrest.
Absolutely. When somebody gets arrested right now, three things are automatic. They ask for the evidence sheet, they ask for the probable cause affidavit, and they ask for the police report. This has become a fourth. And anybody out there, oh, my neighbor got arrested, I'll do a public record request. I like to see what happened. And then you have privacy issues. You know, could that be shown? Will we allow to, you know, be in there if a police officer is talking to his wife, or you walk into a house to answer a call and somebody says something that, you know, that was said in the privacy of their own home and it wasn't criminal in nature. Does that have the right to be published? Mm. There's a lot of issues out there.
A lot of gray area.
It's a lot of gray areas, but, you know.
So what's your immediate plan?
Immediate plan is probably before the end of this year, before the end of the calendar year 2015, we'll roll out a model, and we'll probably have about 20 deputies in certain districts wear them, and we'll evaluate that, test and evaluate that, and we'll see where we go for there. But my vision is to see every deputy and officer wear a body camera. Mm-hmm. And it needs to be paid for, and the funding source needs to come from the county.
We're speaking with Broward County Sheriff Scott Israel on today's Topical Currents. Okay. We'll take a short break and be back with more.
And we're back with today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, and Broward County Sheriff Scott Israel. And we won't open the phones yet, but we will open them in a while. But Sheriff, I wanted to ask you, you have a huge responsibility now. When we were talking before the show started, I didn't realize that every police department in Broward County, you're accountable for every police department, even if like Hollywood has their own police department, Fort Lauderdale has their own police department.
Well, I'm accountable to the citizens because I was elected by every citizen in Broward County. So whether you live in Hollywood or Fort Lauderdale and have your own police department, I'm still your sheriff, and my job is to protect and serve. Now, we wouldn't come in and tell Hollywood or Fort Lauderdale what to do. We got great worker relationships, and we worked very well with all our cities. But, I'm still a sheriff.
Then in that light, could you comment on what occurred to you as far as the Coconut Creek Police Department incident where an unarmed man was tasered and died, and it was ruled a homicide? As Broward County Sheriff, how did that affect you?
Not at all. That was done between the Coconut Creek Police Department and the Broward County State Attorney's Office, so we had no involvement at all whatsoever in that issue.
Okay. But of your 36 years in law enforcement, I guess 33 and a half of them, you said didn't quite prepare you for being the sheriff, that you thought you were prepared. Tell us about that.
I did say that, and I stand by that, you know, from a leadership standpoint, and, you know, all leaders read, you know, not all readers lead, but all leaders read, and, you know, I've studied and learned my lessons well, but I just don't really think anything. There are those select jobs that you really can't prepare for that job till you do it. And the Broward Sheriff's is one of those positions. You have law enforcement, fire, the port, the seaport. You have to listen to the citizens. The politics of it is amazing. People want to request. You know, everybody thinks we have 6,000 jobs. every day to give out, you know, so it's a crazy job.
Along those lines, your view of elected rather than appointed chiefs?
I believe the position should be elected. That's
because not only do you have to run the department, but you have to be thinking about politics and re-election.
Right. But either way, you would anyway, because if the people didn't elect the sheriff, then what would happen is the county commissioners would elect the sheriff, and they're still elected officials, so you can't get out of the politics. So if you're going to have 9 county commissioners who I got great relationships with, or the public electing, I really believe that when you could put something out to the public, put it out to the public. I believe the public gets it right. So let our public elect the sheriff. You know, I don't like running for my job every 4 years, but I don't want to be hypocritical anyway, and I believe the public will get it right.
One of the things you've talked about are programs that'll keep young people out of jail, that was one of part of your mission statement when you were elected. Is that happening? Are you being successful?
Yeah, it sure is. And I'm going to jump ahead that I know one question you were probably going to ask because you alluded to it earlier. What award meant the most to me in my life? And I think it was 2007. I received the Brian Piccolo Award, which had nothing to do with police work, for being a youth sport coach and what I meant to the lives of young people. And young people mean everything to me. You know, I know that they make only, our young folks make up about 30% of Broward County, but they make up 100% of our future. I'm totally committed. Our mission statement is to measure our success by the kids we keep out of jail, not the kids we put in jail. And the main focus and what's made us abundantly successful in that endeavor is there's a program called the Civil Citation Program, Bonnie. And what that means, it's a state program, state statute. And it basically says that if a police officer or a deputy in Florida contacts an individual and these three things exist, juvenile, misdemeanor, first offense, that law enforcement officer could do one of two things. They could arrest that juvenile and bring him to jail, or they could put that juvenile in a civil citation program. I believe I'm the only sheriff in the state that has taken the option away from my deputies and mandates that youngster go to a civil citation program. That means that youngster gets help in alcohol, narcotics, anger management, mental health issues, and they got to complete, I think, a 45 to 60 day course. And the best part about the whole course is they have to go with an adult, a mom, a dad, an uncle, an aunt, a grandma, a coach, principal. And that makes sure that what they're learning in the course gets reinforced in the home. So the thing that makes me most proud about our program is that the recidivism rate in Broward County is 62%. So about 62% of everybody that gets out of jail goes back into jail within about 36 months. Sadly, it's usually for the same crime they went in the first place.
You're the father of teenager. Does the sheriff, the head of the sheriff's department, do their kids act up like any others?
I'm going to say no.
And is it even tough on them to be that?
It is. You know, they love parts of it. And one of them said in an interview, the reporter asked, what's the toughest thing? And I always got to be good, you know, stuff like that. But I'll say this. I got a phenomenal wife who's done an amazing job with our children. I'd like to think I've done a pretty good job being around them. I understood from the time they were babies and having triplets, it's not easy being around babies, but I don't believe kids spell love, L-O-V-E, like you and I. I believe kids spell love, T-I-M-E. And my wife and I have spent so much time with the kids, and they're all three going to college. All three have scholarships. Daughter has bright futures, a football scholarship for one of my boys and a lacrosse scholarship for the other. And they're really, really good kids. They've never been in any serious trouble.
I can't imagine what it must have been like to have three toddlers at once.
Yeah. Could tell you stories that you wouldn't believe.
I was going to ask you this later, but I guess, you know, since we're talking about them, did you ever want them to go into law enforcement, any of them?
No, we'll see where they go. They're only 18. I just wanted them to, you know, I've always told them this, and I believe in this. They can make plans, and you and I can make plans, but God's going to lead us where he ultimately wants us to be. And I told them to study hard, you know, work hard in sports, stay in shape, eat right, sleep right, and most importantly, be a good citizen. Be a good person, and we'll see where that takes them.
That's great, though, to have three kids in college. That's awesome. Yeah. So it's two of them. One has a lacrosse scholarship. The other a football scholarship.
Yes.
Yeah, we also found out you're a big football fan.
Yes.
Yeah. So you were saying about the recidivism, and what was going to be...
This is the amazing thing, Bonnie. Thanks for bringing that back up. The 62% recidivism rate in adults, it should be the same in our civil citation program. It's 5% in our civil citation program. So these kids are getting it. They're not coming back. And the sheriff before me, his last year in office, BSO issued 68 civil citations. In my 2 years plus in office, we're well over 1,000. That's 1,000 kids over that we've given the opportunity to have a second chance. And now, because of our good work, and we take a lot of credit down in Broward County, the governor, about a week or two ago, signed legislation, which now the civil citation program goes from one mistake to three mistakes. So
they're allowed to have a second and third mistake?
Yeah.
I was going to ask you that.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's...
So it's a great thing for our kids.
What about the severity of those mistakes?
They have to be misdemeanors. They have to be misdemeanors. So anything violent, a gun, a felony, an aggravated assault, those are all felonious charges, so that wouldn't be applicable.
We're just having a kid around jails has got to be detrimental to their development and steer them the wrong way.
It is. Why you put a kid in jail, you put him in jail college. Then he learns how to be a better thief or better at what, you know, you put him around the people you don't want him to be around.
What's the most difficult part of being the sheriff? Is there a criticism that you've had leveled against you that...
I think I've overcome that. And the biggest thing is, you know, you have critics. Every decision you make, you know, 75% of the people are going to be with you and 25% of the people are going to be against you and what have you. And I was speaking with a pastor, and the pastor gave me this quote, and I now have it in my office, and I'll remember it the rest of my life. And lions can't care about the opinion of sheep. I got to rely on my decisions. I got to rely on my staff. I got to rely on my education. And critics has every right to offer their opinion. But as a leader, you got to be strong. You got to remain steadfast and do what you think's right and deal with the consequences.
Another one of your goals is, you know, recognizing the needs of the disadvantaged, like the homeless in the community. What are you doing on that front?
A lot. But if I've done one thing right on that, it's I think we've changed the philosophy and the culture of the law enforcement officer, the deputy on the road. And that is now we believe and they understand my vision is that people with addictions, homeless people, are not problem people. They're people with problems. And we need to be compassionate. And jail is the place for some people, but oftentimes jail's not the place for others. And if a person's homeless, now we have a homeless management system. So when first responders go out with a homeless individual, they pull up information in a CAD, which tells them, this is their doctor. This is the medicine they're on. This is where they need to go. This is their next of kin. So we're treating people different. We received the Civil Rights Award as an agency by the International Association of Chiefs of Police for our dealing with the homeless. And many of our deputies now wear CIT pins. And it's a gold pin that would be just under the name tag. And it's in gold, it says CIT. And it stands for Crisis Intervention Training. And I believe the numbers may be, Vita will get you the right numbers if these aren't right, but I believe we have about 40 or 50 trained deputies. When I became sheriff, I believe we're over 300 now. And the remarkable thing about this training is the mentally ill individual, they know what that stands for. So when they see a CIT on an officer or a deputy, that connection goes and they go, wow, that person's received special training. They understand what I'm going through. And there's a calming effect on the whole incident and it helps out a lot.
As the Broward County Sheriff, does your department have any concrete ways to keep officers from becoming burned out, disillusioned, and possibly angry cops?
Well, we have the they have the ability to have employee assistance program. So if an employee feels that mm-hmm. there's stress in their lives or what have you, we do have an employee assistance program that's available to anyone on the agency, sworn or non-sworn.
There's high rates of addiction and divorce mm-hmm.
yeah.
among officers.
I'm a big believer in training, so we train, we practice. We're fortunate to have an agency of almost 6,000 people where there's a lot of different openings, homicide, canine, narcotics, SWAT, dive team, and all these different. So people have the opportunity to move around and get refreshed and get recharged. There's plenty of opportunity for promotion. So, we do the best we can. But
yes,
I work with a great
bunch. I'm moving to homicide.
Yeah.
We're speaking with Broward County Sheriff Scott Israel. We're going to take a short break. We'll come back and we'll invite you to take part in the conversation. Stay with us.
And we're back. It's today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, and Broward County Sheriff Scott Israel. If you'd like to join in the conversation with a comment or question, 1-800-743-9576. 1-800-743-9576. Or email, that's radio@wlrn.org.
Do you welcome the police in your neighborhood when trouble arises? Do you trust your local police? What do you think is the most important message for law enforcement? Please give us a call or email. What does it mean exactly that Broward Sheriff's Office is the largest fully accredited sheriff's office in the United States? What does that mean?
To be accredited, you have a body come in, and they examine your policies, your procedures, and they hold you to. They make sure you have standards and policies to cover just about any aspect of what could go, what you need to run an agency. And then they make suggestions. They look at your filing. They look at your operations, your strategies, your administration. They offer, constructive criticism, and then you go in compliance with the constructive criticism, and you get accredited. And just means of everybody in the United States have credited of all the sheriff's office, we're the largest. So it's a big feather in our cap.
Mm. Sheriff, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Bonnie.
I just was wondering how long you've had that distinction.
I'm not sure.
Oh, okay.
Sheriff, how about the changes that you propose in penalties for low-level marijuana infractions?
Right. I didn't propose the penalties. You know, I'm not a lawmaker, as you know. I'm just an enforcement.
But you favor them.
But I favor them. I just think that we have a lot of... If we have somebody and they have an adult and they have a misdemeanor amount of marijuana, I believe the deputy should have discretion or the officer should have discretion. If they think that something happened, that the person needs to go to jail and go before a judge or a magistrate, they need to do that. But if we could give them a $100 ticket and they could pay a fine and it gets registered and they could go on with their life and we don't need to bring them to jail, I'm very supportive of that too. I believe jails are for violent criminals.
The system, though, almost works on itself. These small infractions, you have the bail bondsmen, the lawyers, the privately owned jails, is that there's a lot of money at stake in keeping these kind of individuals incarcerated, or incarcerating them in the first place.
Yeah, there are.
It is
what it is.
Again, our number, 1-800-743-9576.
The lines are lighting up. We do have an emailer. Michael says, isn't it that we expect police officers to be psychologists, counselors, and have psychiatric knowledge to deal with the public? Moreover, the disrespect for law is seen and heard even by the everyday good citizen, the sheriff states. Societal mores have changed, haven't they?
I guess what the writer is saying is that he appreciates what we do and that we have to be well-rounded. Yeah, we're a lot of things to a lot of people. You know, he's very right about that. That's a profound email. You know, we're asked to, as I said earlier in the show, we're asked to settle disputes and give advice about civil issues that really we deal with the criminal, aspect of issues. But people ask, what do I do here? What do I do there? They'll call you people. If you live on a block and the people on your block know you're a cop, you get called an awful lot for a lot of advice.
You were saying before the show that you've had more people telling you how much they appreciate your service right now, which is, I thought, remarkable given the current climate.
That's a true statement. I mean, we had Ferguson, we had Baltimore,
West Charleston,
which was the most devastating video I've ever seen in my life. It was hard to digest and hard to watch. That was disturbing. I was disturbed by that video. People are angry about what happened in West Charleston, and they should be angry about West Charleston. But the messages have been loud and clear to myself and many of our deputies that, you know, we respect law enforcement. We couldn't do it without you, and thank you for what you've done. And I've got so many people telling me to be careful, thank your men and women, and I appreciate that. I really do.
How big a problem is drugs, or are drugs still?
They're a very big problem in FLACA. Could we speak about FLACA for a minute or two?
Yeah, I saw that in your material. What's that about?
FLACA is I worked undercover for about 7 years in the 80s and bought and sold cocaine and quaaludes and marijuana. And, you know, I was very heavily involved in that aspect of law enforcement. But this drug, in my opinion, is the worst we've ever had. It's a bath salt. It's a synthetic drug. It once ingested, it raises the body temperature from 98 degrees to 107. It could kill you immediately. It could shut down your kidneys.
Why do people take it?
For the high.
What's the high?
They call it excited delirium. And I guess it makes you impervious to pain. It makes you feel like a superman, superhuman strength. But because the people are so overheated, they strip off their clothes, a lot of them. They run in traffic. They dive through windows. They dive into police departments. There was a clip of an individual on FLACA diving into the Fort Lauderdale Police Department. We know as deputies and law enforcement officers that these people need to get to a hospital in minutes. So we're trying to secure them and get them in a vehicle, an ambulance to transport them. But they're afraid of us. They're delusional. They think we're out to hurt them. So they're resistant, so we have to struggle with them, which makes their body temperature go up further. But the worst thing about this drug is the nickname of the drug on the street is $5 insanity, which means it costs $5 for a hit, which means a homeless person, a child, who can't get together $5. And it's not even an addiction part. One hit of this and you could die.
And a really $5 die. Easy overdose.
Easy.
And your body temperature is raised to 107 degrees?
Yes.
Wouldn't that kill your brain?
Could, yeah.
Let's take a call or two. First up on our line, we've got Beatrice in Coral Springs. Hey there.
Oh, hello. Cities like Sunrise, Lauderhill, and Pembroke Pines have a very disproportionate number of white police as compared to the ethnic breakdown of the population. And this is according to the New York Times. And Margate, Coral Springs, Coconut Creek are not very good either. So I'm wondering, what's the overall figure for Broward County as far as the ethnic racial breakdown, and what's being done to improve the disproportional situation?
You know, that's a great question. I don't know the exact numbers, but I'm fairly educated on it, so I'm going to throw some numbers at you, Beatrice. I will tell you, none of those cities or areas that we patrol. It is a lot different in the Broward Sheriff's Office, and I believe the minority population of our sworn is about 33%, which is about 5 or 6% above the minority population in Broward County, or the African American population in Broward County. So we work very, very hard. We recruit. In that aspect, because I realize as sheriff that we need to look like the community we serve, and we're working very hard to do that, Beatrice.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks for your call. And we'll move along to line five. This is Norma in Coconut Creek. Hi.
Hi. I'd like to know why police officers are trained to shoot to kill rather than to simply disable in some way when they're confronting someone?
That's another great question. And It's not that we're shoot. You know, I do know what you're saying, and I don't disagree with you. But it's not that we're taught to kill. It's we're taught to hit central body mass and double tap, and that's to fire two shots initially in that central body mass, which is the biggest part of the body and where you're going to hit. Because if you were to learn, if you were to shoot to wound and hit an arm or a leg, you're shooting because you have the right to use deadly force. So somebody is about to kill you, or somebody is about to kill another person. And if you hit them in an arm or a leg, that doesn't mean they're going to be able to be stopped, and they could go ahead and continue on with the felony that they're about to commit, which is something deadly. Otherwise, you wouldn't be firing your weapon, theoretically. So you're taught to neutralize the target, and that's the term we use. Do what you have to do to neutralize the target so they can't hurt you or other people. And that's what the training is. That's the premise of the training. I hope that helps.
Okay, so it's neutralize the target. I will try to keep that in mind.
Thank you. I really appreciate that.
Okay, and one more on the same topic. This is Diego in Fort Lauderdale. Hi.
Hi. I was calling because I wanted to ask why it's so hard to report a police officer when they have committed something against a person that was arrested, when they have committed, like, when they have hit someone or
when they what, Diego? Say it again.
Sorry, when they have hit someone or commit a crime against a person that hasn't done anything.
In other words, Diego, what you're saying is if somebody sees police misconduct, why is it hard to report that? Is that your question?
Yeah.
It's not hard at all. If you see whatever, that you find out the agency of that deputy or police officer and call their internal affairs division and tell them you want to file a complaint, it shouldn't be hard at all.
Oh, the thing is, my friend once got punched in the face by a police officer. He got knocked out 2 teeth out of his mouth. And then the other police officer that was with him on the report said that my friend punched the female officer. But it wasn't like that. We were a bunch of people at a house, and this police officer came running and pushed my friend, pushing him in the face. And then they said that he hit his head on the floor, and we tried to report it, and he went to jail. They make him say that he attacked the police. They make him plead guilty, and we couldn't report it at the end. Like, even though we got a lawyer and everything.
What is the best way to make that report, Sheriff?
If you believe that you witnessed police misconduct, the best thing for you to do is call the Internal Affairs Division of that agency. Tell them you want to make an appointment, you want to come in, you can bring a lawyer in, you can bring anybody in you want, bring witnesses in, and you file a report. Now, just because you file a report doesn't mean that, you know, it still needs to be investigated and thoroughly looked at.
Of course, a lot of people, the young and disadvantaged in particular, think they all just work together and they're all out for me.
Yeah. No, we
they stick up for each other.
Yeah, there's no thin blue line. I mean, if we... there's an internal affairs complaint. We'll take it very, very seriously. We investigate it very, very thoroughly. And we sustain complaints on our deputies, and we clear our deputies, you know, so we do both things.
If in the case of Diego, is there a statute of limitations? He didn't say when this happened, but can they go back and have this investigated?
Well, there is a statute of limitations, but I don't know when it happened,
yeah.
But he certainly could go back, yes.
Okay. All right. We're speaking with Broward County Sheriff Scott Israel on Topical Currents. We're going to take, our last break, and we'll come back.
And we return. It is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman with you. 48 minutes past 1 o'clock, we continue our conversation with Broward County Sheriff Scott Israel. Sheriff, it seems that over the past few decades, there's been a strong public move and political move to get away from rehabilitation in prisons and to make it pretty much strict punishment. Do you see things lightening up a little bit and a return to more rehabilitation efforts?
Yeah,
the penal system.
We take the exact opposite viewpoint of what you've seen and has been out there. You know, our colonel over at the detention part of the house, Gary Palmer, he works strenuously to his staff to develop programs and to have people re-enter into society. And we have, when we know a person's going to get out of prison, we have programs now where they get with all kinds of counselors and they get ready to go back in and, looking for jobs and things like that. So I believe in...
available to everyone who's going to be released?
Yeah. And there's all types of things we do within the framework of the jail with people getting out. So listen, you can't keep arresting your problems. And what the authors say, insanity, was doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. You know, we need to work with a lot of folks. And then again, we have a lot of violent offenders out there, and violent offenders that destroy families and lives need to be in jail.
And another call, Charlie in Pompano. Charlie, could you turn your phone down? Your radio down? I'm sorry.
Sure, I'm on it. Okay.
Go ahead.
Okay, go ahead.
Right, I'd like to ask Sheriff Israel why that when an officer comes to a thing and he knows somebody's got a weapon and it's not a gun, but they show up and they pull their pistols out and they shoot them because they say they're threatened by the assailant, you know? I mean, what happened to beanbag shotguns and... you know, stuff like that, any kind of thing to stop them besides shooting them? What happened to that?
Well, we use less lethal all the time, and you notice I didn't say less than lethal. We use less lethal. We use beanbags. We use stun devices. We use tasers. There's an old saying that it's true. You don't bring a knife to a gunfight. If depending on what the person has, determines the force should never be determined by the police officer. Force should be determined by the suspect. You always want to make sure that you're able to neutralize a suspect and not allow others to get hurt. As far as generally, I learned to stay away from Charlie general questions like that. You would have to give me a specific case. I would have to look at what the officer did in that exact set of circumstances and then maybe offer some constructive criticism or say, he did everything right. So I'd have to know. But to say that, we show up and immediately pull out pistols and I've been on too many calls to know that that's not exactly accurate. I think the way we approach situations for the most part is strategically and operationally, viable.
We're talking, you said that you've done everything you wanted to do. So I have two questions. One is, do you have aspirations to run for higher office? And two is what you're proudest of.
First question is, I probably take a good time to announce my run for presidency in 2020. No, I have no aspirations to run for any other office but sheriff. I love this job, and as long as it's God's will for me to stay here, I got a phenomenal team of people I work with every day. I love coming in the building and being around a community. And I think, I'm most proud of the team I've assembled, without question. All over fire, PIO, police, detention, just all over the building. I just assembled a team of people that just are successful, they're compassionate, they care, and they want to do the right thing by the community. And I'm just proud of how we look right now.
What did you learn from the time when you were unsuccessful running?
Surround myself with different people. Most of what I learned was spiritual. I learned that God doesn't answer our prayers when we want him to. He comes when he feels like, but he's always right on time. And you just got to, your time will come and just keep working hard and God's in charge.
And we'll take another caller. This is Todd in Delray Beach. Hi.
Hi. I just wanted to thank you and honor the Broward Sheriff's deputies. I've been volunteering, teaching a meditation class in the Broward jail system for at least 12 years. And I've been in state, federal, and private institutions, and I've never seen anyone that comes close to the professionalism and courtesy that I see, year after year, the deputies. Such consistency in any company, in any organization is
extremely rare, and I just feel honored every time I go in there. So thank you, and I thank the deputies.
What a great way to end the show. Thank you for that call, Todd.
Oh, we're not over yet.
Okay, well, last segment.
Well, sorry, Todd, we should have used it. We should have waited for your call, actually.
Thank you, Todd.
All right.
Okay, thanks for calling. Sheriff Israel, if your budget were tripled tomorrow, if you found out from the commissioners, well, you're going to get anything you want, basically. What changes would you make?
Well, I would like to give better raises to the men and women who do their job every day throughout the agency. You could talk about programs, systems, charts, and graphs. That's not what's successful in life. The only thing successful in life are people. And I'd like to give our people better salaries and better benefits. From a capital, we have a large portion due to the lack of vision and oversight of the last sheriff. Our fleet is not where it needs to be. We have about a large portion of our fleet has over 160,000 miles. There was no fleet plan in place, so we need money to replace fleet. And if I could just take that question a little bit further,
sure.
Bonnie, I'd like to say that, you know, the county commissioners, the nine county commissioners I work with, they're really excellent people, and I respect it, and I'm friends with each and every one of them. But somehow, when they form a commission, it seems sometimes that they think my job is to save money and keep the millage rate from going up like their job is, and that is not my job. I wasn't elected as a legislator. I wasn't elected to keep taxes down. I was elected to keep us safe. And my job isn't to save money. My job is to be fiscally responsible and spend money when I have to make sure every citizen in Broward County is as safe as they need to be. And that's my marching orders from our community.
What's the most common misconception about police officers?
That there are two teams. You got the Giants, playing the Dallas Cowboys, that were the misconception that we're on the other team. We're part of the community. We come from our community. We love our communities. You know, we come from places like Boyd Anderson High School and Stranahan and Weston and Cooper City. This is where we come from, and we are part of the community. And the fact that, we're looking to get you, or we're on that other team. No, we're one team, one county, working together to problem solve, reduce crime, and enhance the quality of life of our citizens. And we want to be partners with the community. I want to unite Broward.
I asked our listeners what the most important message they had. I don't know. We haven't had really that responded to. But what would be the most important message you'd like to convey?
To the listeners? We're your sheriff. We're your partner. If we do something right, text us, email us, let us know. We performed in an exemplary manner. Compliment that deputy, compliment that firefighter. Let us know how well we did that day. Conversely, if we make a mistake, bring it to our attention. Let us know what we did wrong or what you think we did wrong so we can look at it, investigate it, train, and get better. We need to communicate. We can't let spaghetti become confetti. We must communicate.
Spaghetti becoming confetti. Well, it's been a very pleasant hour with you, Broward County Sheriff Scott Israel. We hope you'll come back sometime, too.
Wait, let's see. I thought we had one more
email.
Yeah, please come back. We'll do a day in the life of.
Okay.
That would be interesting.
I would love to. I really enjoyed myself, and it was great being here, and I sure will come back.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
And thanks for joining us this hour. Apologies to those callers we couldn't get to. The program was produced by Polly Landis with additional assistance from lead producer Richard Ives. Technical direction provided by online producer Paul Leary. He also writes and designs our online offerings, such as free audio archives and downloads at WLRN.org. Also, links, photos, and discussion on the Topical Currents Facebook page. Check it out. Drop us a like. And on tomorrow's program, we address not the baby boomers, but the aging boomers. In 20 years, there'll be double the number of those 85 years and older. How should this explosion be viewed? And how can we age with freedom and dignity? We'll have a panel on hand and, of course, be taking your calls. Again, for audio archives, go to WLRN.org. Joseph Cooper with Bonnie Berman. Thanks for listening. Next, Here and Now from NPR News.